health and wellness to history and the occult, we are here to do our bit to lift the world from its shackles. We hope we can shine a light of truth on a range of different subjects through our own and our guests' experiences. This is the Infinite Potential Podcast with Alex Hickman and Ross Wood.
Welcome back to the Infinite Potential Podcast. I'm here with Ross and also with Gurdeep and Joshua. I forgot Gurd's last name. Gurd, how do you pronounce it?
Orjula.
Gurdeep Orjula and Joshua Stanley. So we're here today. We're going to be talking about the use of psychedelic medicine, plant medicine, and recreational drugs and how they affect society today. So Gurd, I think you've just come back from an ayahuasca retreat, I think.
I have indeed, yeah. So I took part in a New Year's ceremony down south, which was nice. I was invited by friends to partake, and I felt like it was the right time to drink the tea again.
Talk a bit about it, mate. Let everybody know what it is.
So ayahuasca originates from the Amazon and surrounding areas. Been traditionally used in tribes for many thousands of years for healing at the heart of it. That's what it's for. As we go through this podcast, I mean, I'm no expert by any means. My research is simply having partaken in drinking the tea. And just to let you guys know, Josh has got a bit of a cold, so
you might be coughing a little bit.
My apologies if you can hear it.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about. It's sort of like, where do you start? Always the most profound experience you could ever have. And each time is very different.
How many times have you done it now?
So I've drunk 5 times over 2 ceremonies. The first time was 3 nights and this one was obviously 2. Both very different in their own right. And
Have you found like fundamental changes when you come back?
I think that's down to you as a person. You'll definitely find fundamental changes when you're there. Whether you find them when you come back or not depends on if you're willing to implement them. Take your learnings and adapt your lifestyle.
I just wanted to take a little step back and just ask you what was going through your mind when you did it in the first place, and
good question.
Where did you first hear about it?
I'll answer the latter first. I heard about it through Alex, actually, who had drank a few times before at that particular retreat. And I felt that, I think everything happens for a reason. People will come into your life and leave at particular times because there is a higher power at play. And we were just having a normal chat over a coffee in Costa, and it came up and it sort of just clicked with me, really. I was going through a few things in my life, just as any human does. I was in a certain place. I have certain insecurities. I needed certain questions that I wanted answering. And I felt like the tea could perhaps give that to me. I wasn't sure, but I've always been the sort of guy who's willing to try and jump into the unknown, if you like.
Do you feel like it was at a place of last resort, or
absolutely not?
No,
it was more of a helping hand,
yeah,
and perhaps a kick up the arse.
Did you do much research before you went and went ahead with it? Because, I mean, you can type it in on YouTube today, and obviously you can see opposite ends of the spectrum, like with everything. But there's a lot of positive journeys that have come out of it, and then equally the opposite, and people that have, there's even noted deaths of. That people have gone on these the ayahuasca retreats
and died.
Yeah.
Right. I've not heard of any of those, but I did a bit of research. Yeah, absolutely. Like with anything, I think the internet is at the heart of its collection of opinions, and if you let the negative scare you, then you'll never do anything, will you? I went with an intention. I went with maximum intention and minimum expectation. I didn't expect anything to happen. I knew what it was about. but I understood that the journey that was to unfold would be partly based on me as well, my internal setting. So yeah, to answer your question, I did a bit of research, but I felt like given that Alex had done it, and I know Alex is a good lad, you know, I was confident that I'd get plenty out of it.
I think I'll just put in as well, when regarding the research done before it, when I did my first ceremony, and myself and Gertie went there together, I would advocate not doing any research on it if possible. I think what Gerd was saying about the expectation, you do go there with minimum expectation because you don't really know what to expect anyway. Obviously, like you said, speaking to Alex about it, who's done it before, you kind of get an idea, but you'll never actually know until you've done it yourself, regardless. But I think for me, knowing that I was already going to do it anyway, and I knew it was in a safe environment, a safe place, I wasn't kind of scared to do it. I think it was more so being that interested in it, you want to kind of do further reading and further research. And I think me personally, I ended up watching a few videos. I mean, there's a really good documentary on Netflix for people to have a look at called The Spirit Molecule, if you want a kind of an entry point into looking at these kind of things. But I think from watching certain videos and doing certain readings, I did go there with an unexpected expectation on a certain level, because I think I saw how other people had reacted to it. I'd seen what other people have experienced, and I was kind of thinking, well, when's this going to happen to me? Yeah. And I think on my first night of drinking, that was a massive drawback to my experience, because you don't know what to expect, and it is a very, very powerful medicine. You can lose yourself almost in kind of getting confused with the reason why you're there, and then your breath starts to get shorter. You can start to panic a little bit if you're kind of not really in a process of what they call letting go. And I think I was expecting a little bit too much on my first night, which in turn, I believe, was down to my previous research and what other people had experienced.
Because you boys aren't new to psychedelic medicine and drugs, if you like, for the lack of a better word.
Drugs.
I mean,
I don't that's not the word drugs.
Nah, that's not a drug. I appreciate that. That's not a drug. That's simply a plant. And if you actually speak to the shaman, they actually say that the plants have told them to put those two plants together in order to give you the effect. So there's, as Gerd said earlier, you said that there's a higher level up at play.
Yeah.
What do you think? What do you mean by that?
I think that as humans, we get caught up in things that we can see with our human eyes. But when you're in the other realm, if you like, that's what I like to call it, you're sort of, you realise that there's a lot more that you can see with your eyes closed, your internal self, the universe itself, both of which are the same thing. And I think they're just sort of, they're you get a one-way ticket into someplace else. all of the words, I think, that we have in our vocabulary that have been designed by humans are usually made to explain things in the material world, but this goes far beyond that, And it's sometimes difficult to articulate, such as, you know, during conversations, but
I think with people who have experienced it, they kind of have that notion and idea of what it consists of, but you're extremely right. None of the experience is ever put into words in regards to what you are experiencing. It's more of a kind of
feeling,
almost like a telepathy in the communication that you're receiving, because it is the spirit that's talking to you, but not in a generic talking sense. And I think the point you touched on as well, Alex, is again, another video as an entry point of TEDx Talks with Graham Hancock does an extraordinary speech explaining it all and his own kind of views and journeys that he's been on. And like you said before, the plant that they actually use in the Amazon, the plant that actually has to be used in alongside it in order for us to be able to digest it, there's over 200,000 other plants that could have possibly been chosen, and they truly believe that it's the plants and the spirit that spoke to them, and they were told which plants to use alongside each other, because how else they would have ever known that mixing one plant with another would allow human beings to digest the active ingredient, which is the DMT, which we can't usually do, is an extraordinary...
Yeah, I just want to add to that for people who might not know what the hell Josh is on about. In ayahuasca, the active ingredient is DMT, which is actually naturally created in our pineal gland, but it's not orally active. And what these people of the Amazon discovered through talking to the plants is that another plant could actually... it's basically an MAO inhibitor, which therefore makes the DMT orally active, because DMT is usually smoked. But when you do that, it's you're straight up for 15 minutes into the cosmos and then straight back down, whereas ayahuasca is guided meditation. It can last between 4 to 6 hours. There's usually a shaman involved who will sing what they call the Icaros, which are songs of healing, which consists of their voices, which is singing, the Shipibo, the Shikapa, which are dried leaves. Truly, truly an amazing experience, because you realise that the songs that he's singing have been passed down to him through generations, and you're literally in the presence of, ancient methods of being. It's amazing, really amazing.
Would you say that different people are going to experience dramatically different effects depending on their current level of consciousness and what state they're currently in? And another one, just to add on to that, the physical side effects, the negative physical side effects you get from it, like the purging, the diarrhea.
Did you say that's negative?
Well, that's the illusion of it, isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Did obviously knowing that before you went into it, did you have any fear going into it about that, about the physical side effects, or not really?
Josh?
The second question I'll answer first then, but no, I don't think the physical side effects were ever a kind of an issue that you tend to think about, especially as I explained earlier, the kind of research and video watching and reading that I'd done. People do mention it, but they don't really touch upon that as a kind of large notion of it. It's more so to do with the experience that they have, but like Gerd said, by no means is purging a negative effect from it all. It's a very, very positive and healing effect.
No one likes to puke. No, really.
Of course not.
But you know what? It's the ego that's trying to stop you doing it. Well, once you remove your ego, you'll chuck up everywhere.
Absolutely. Well, when you're in that place and you can hear some of the sounds, it's it's quite phenomenal. But I think the idea of the purging, I mean, some people will probably turn around and think, why the hell would you want to go and drink something that's going to make you sick and vomit for 4 to 6 hours? But
and that's fine. It is. It's not for everyone.
No, of course, it's not.
Just to add on, would you say that it's that you could recommend it to certain people, or do you think it's got to come from a place of knowing or inner knowing?
I can only talk from experience, and I only share with people who want to listen. Mm-hmm. I'd never go out and preach and say, I've come back from, direct contact with gods, and I've got a message for you all, because that would be the ego talking, wouldn't it? And that's one thing that I'm trying to overcome. Yeah. And I'm in a much better position now than I was before drinking. To go back to your other question about, what did you ask about people of a certain consciousness?
Yeah, do you think it, on different scales, depending on... what someone's current level of consciousness is.
Yeah.
So whether someone's in depression or current state of joy, and how do you think that can impact people at different levels?
Yeah, I think at the heart of it, if you want to drink the tea, A, you'll find it, and B, I think you'll have your calling. It's good to know what you're getting yourself in for, but not to have any expectations, regardless of where you are at with your consciousness level. I think anyone and everyone could drink medicine. It just depends on their own set and setting.
I think it's the old adage where it says you don't get what you want, you get what you need. And I think
you
haven't got no choice but to just face up to whatever you need. You've got no hope anyway of getting away from it. So if you do actually want to go into your shadow, which is a Carl Jung phrase, it's probably one of the, well, definitely the most effective thing I've ever done. I don't know about you guys.
I think it most definitely is. I think touching upon the question that Kurt's just been answering as well, certain people's levels of consciousness. I don't think it matters your level of consciousness, but I do think it matters that you have an understanding of what you're doing and you do take the due diligence and the time to speak to people who've done it before, and just to try and get an idea, purely for the fact that there's a lot of people out there who, like we just said, would never in a million years think about going to do something like that for the experiences that it's going to cause. And I think the other side of it as well, from, I mean, what Kurt was saying earlier, it was quite talking about being in contact with God and spirits and stuff like that. I do think you've got to have a certain level of kind of spiritual belief to an extent. I mean, by all means, if you had zero and you went there and you experienced it, you'd definitely come away with it.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of people out there, and again, like Gerd said, we would never talk to people who don't want to listen, because it can be seen as something that's a bit out there. It's not massively kind of promoted within a Western world, which isn't, it's not going to be. But I think you come back from places talking about you've seen God, and they're more likely to put you in a mental asylum than look to you for kind of guidance and stuff, really.
For sure.
I mean, just a book that I was reading this morning from Alan Watts, to pick a point out, within the Hindu culture, if someone said they found God, they'd be congratulated and shown that that's the way of moving forward. But I think within our kind of Western world, it's going to take a little bit of time for people to kind of accept certain things.
That's the issue, and it is an issue in the West, is that we've severed our connection with spirits. Before I drank tea, don't get me wrong, I didn't believe in God at all. I thought religion was for, you know, kooky people. But
I think there's a difference between believing in God and believing that there's a higher spirit or a higher kind of power, is in essence.
When I refer to God, that's what I mean.
Right, okay.
It's just a label, isn't
it? Yeah.
It is.
It's just an easier word for everyone to understand.
It is, but I think at the same time, I don't really put it in that kind of picture, if you like, because I'm the same as Gerd. I don't believe in one single God, and I'm not a religious person in essence, but I've always believed there is a kind of spiritual power, and there is a higher spirit, and that we do come from somewhere more than what we're told at school in our history books and whatever else. But like Gerd said, I think before experiencing ayahuasca, you might hold certain kind of questions and beliefs about certain things. But when you leave there, you most definitely have a thought process that there is a higher spiritual power.
There is a creator of everything, and I refer to him as God.
Do you find that because of the, whatever you want to call it, the place that you reach in your mind, obviously the scientists out there will be calling it hallucinations, or if you go to a different realm or whatever, however you want to label it, if you feel like it removes the ego to a certain degree, do you find that, did any of you find that coming back into the Western world and how society functions, did you find it a struggle to then integrate back into society and be of a value, or did you find that you had to really have time to yourself to?
After the first ceremony, I did find it quite hard. Just because I had seen things and felt things that I didn't feel that others close to me would necessarily understand. And I also work in a corporate job, which has no sort of connection with where I've just been whatsoever, and trying to operate in that context effectively, I found quite difficult. But through experience now, just to quote something from the Spirit Molecule documentary, I like to think that I'm able to view through the chandelier of reality from a new vantage point.
Nice.
Because you can look at the same thing an infinite number of times, and that's the trick, I think.
I think it's a very good and great quote, and I think that's what it does. It does expand your mind to be able to look at the world and your own life and your personal experiences in a different way. And I think that is one of the major kind of breakthroughs that it does allow you to do, because, like Gerd just said, there's a lot of people out there who feel like they're kind of stuck, not really moving anywhere, or everyone's got your own kind of personal issues and reasons for being where we are and what we do. But I do think it expands your kind of mind to awaken you to certain senses that you've kind of not really perceived before and experienced before. And having gone through that, it does allow you to kind of utilise your experience in your kind of everyday life.
Yeah.
Without, like you say, pushing that onto other people who don't necessarily or aren't necessarily interested in it. I think hallucinations is a very good point to make as well, because I think, again, touching on, a lot of people say the same things, but Alan Watts in particular states that the hallucination effect is more of a Western world kind of viewpoint as to people who are on drugs with glassy eyes and kind of out of it completely, just sat on a sofa somewhere, just don't know what's going on. And I think that's kind of the wrong way to look at these plants and these medicines, because they are medicines and they are plants. It's not some kind of man-made concoction. It's been through a kind of process, but it's not something that's been synthetically made in order to create a kind of high where, like, I mean, slightly off, but these newer legal highs and stuff like that people are bringing out to try and kind of curb things, when it's... I think hallucinations is kind of, it's a stereotypical word use is what I'm trying to get at. They're more kind of visions and breakthroughs. A hallucination is a word that's kind of touched upon quite a lot. But
I think everyone's trying to, in some way, well, most people are trying to reach a sort of altered state of being, whether it's through medicine, coffee, alcohol, cocaine, blah, blah, blah. It's just that they alter you differently. Ayahuasca, for instance, makes you question things.
Yeah.
Getting pissed doesn't.
So why
is one one's illegal and the other isn't?
I think what
you're getting into your conspiracies now, yeah.
So why do you
let's go there?
So why do you think that substances like coffee, alcohol, sugar are so easy to get your hands on, where something like ayahuasca is so
prohibited,
so difficult? Yeah.
I think within a Western world, we're kind of, these things are advertised to us
because they want cheap
stimulants and alcohol, because they want to keep you in line. They want you to be at work. Coffee as a stimulant, energy drinks. I mean, I touched upon a program the other day that I caught of, and it's school children now are being sold energy drinks. Before, and they're drinking at least three a day, most of them.
Oh, my
they have,
word.
Some have two for breakfast. No. Have one at lunch. A lot of schools are trying to ban them now. Obviously, these are meant for adult consumption. But the fact that we need so much caffeine in order to live what we perceive as a normal life and get through a normal working day, to me, is... I mean, people talk about addictions all the time, but every single... Not every single, it's a bit of a stereotype, a generalisation, but most of us in this country are addicted to sugar since being children.
Yeah.
And that's 8 times more addictive than cocaine. Now, if we knew that as children and as parents, but we're still allowed to walk into a shop and we've got 200 chocolate bars sat on the side that kids are just going to look at and automatically want. And
cheaper in some cases than fruit.
I mean,
the good stuff.
Of course, yeah. And then you talk about alcohol, which Graham Hancock refers to as... apologies.
Sorry for
the
listening, Graham.
The most boring of drugs. Because it is. It does put you in an altered state of mind, but it puts you in a state where... don't know what's going on once you've had too much, especially. I mean, it does, it lowers inhibitions. It's one of those things that everyone likes to do from time to time, have a little drink and and whatever else. But when you can go to a store and buy a 2 litre bottle of cider for about £2.50, and you've got many people obviously doing that from kind of homeless societies and whatever else, you've got to question our society as to how, when alcohol is the leading drug that causes deaths within the world and in general, how is that allowed to be so glorified and sold in shops and mass produced on such a large stage? Yet, if you want to go and have a smoke a joint of weed or whatever in your own home, not affecting anyone else, you could end up going to prison or getting fined and whatever else for it, for something that's never actually killed anyone, compared to the amount of people that get liver disease and whatever else. It's just
shocking. That's part of the propaganda, though, isn't it?
Of course.
A 2 litre bottle of cider, a bottle of vodka from a fucking petrol station. Where's the logic?
Oh, well, exactly, yeah. Why should anyone be allowed to sell alcohol at a petrol station? Well, really,
on the flip side of the same coin, I think some people are switching on, obviously, with regards to things like marijuana and it being legalised in certain countries and states. So who knows what the future's going to bring? I mean, I am optimistic. I'm not as doom and gloom as I used to be.
No.
In what sense? Shift
as well,
in what sense?
The legalisation of marijuana, or in the bigger picture as a whole?
Bigger picture. Right. You know, we've had chats many a time where I felt like, you know, oh, I wish I was born 100 years in the future, because it's just shit here at the minute. look at what's going on. War, famine, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's a special time to be alive, and it's the right time.
There is definitely a shift going on globally in regards to a lot of people starting to turn on. Meditation's become far, far more popular than it ever has been before. Yoga as well. These are all kind of ancient philosophies, if you like, and they are becoming a lot more present, especially in the Western world now.
Namaste.
The old New Age namaste.
That's it.
What a load of bollocks.
But I think referring back to the medicine as well, I think partaking in the medicine also helps you open your mind to that kind of bit more of a state where, as Gerd was saying before, you can. I think going through life at times, everyone has ups and downs and we all have problems that we have to deal with. And I think you can get to that kind of doom and gloom stage where it's like, when's something good going to happen to me? When's my luck going to change and whatever else? And I think taking ayahuasca and drinking the medicine, as well as other things as well, I think it does tend to start to put you in more of a perspective as to what is going on with the world, and also more so in tune with yourself, because that's the idea. It's not about anyone else. It's about you going in there to become more in tune with yourself as an individual, going there to ask questions of what you want essentially to be answered, and trying to work with the medicine, because that's what they say you should do. And then taking from that what you've experienced, and then trying to improve you as an individual, which then helps improve the world, because of what you look at inwards.
You help yourself and you help others.
You put outwards as well, because I think it allows you to look at the world from a kind of different standpoint, in order to want to help others as well as yourself, not just be of a kind of almost selfish mindset in, where am I going to be in a year's time? When am I going to get this promotion? When all these kind of materialistic things and superficial things that...
Isn't this one of the reasons why you started this podcast, is to serve others?
Yep, not charging a penny, it's all to just get it out there, man.
Well, yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
You know.
I think you only get to that point, though, when you've experienced certain things. I mean, I've had a very good life.
Yeah.
You know, I've been brought up very, very well and whatever else, but I've worked fucking hard to get to where I am now and be able to, you know, I've took a lot of risks with a lot of courage to take ayahuasca. No, I'd never known anybody before. A friend had mentioned it to me, but no one had ever got into me. And it was just a calling.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there and I never come back the same. And that was it then. That point then, it was just, right, let's just serve everything.
That's it, innit?
Let's just serve everybody.
You open doors that can't be fully closed again.
No, you pick up the bag and you can't pull it down, man. Yeah, that's what it is.
In a very good way.
Yeah.
Whether you experience the medicine in the light or the dark, it's always a gift. Like, I've had the same experience on both occasions now, where the first night I always experience in the light, and the second night I sort of go deeper and get to know a bit more about myself. and I always make notes about my experience. I'll share a bit, if I may.
Go with it, man.
So, on New Year's, on night one, I'll just reel off a few bullet points and notes that I made.
Was this from the first time you went?
No, this is the second ceremony, first night.
Right, this was over New Year, so it just happened, yeah.
Yeah, on the 30th this was. So, for the first time, I truly understood infinite. Nothing matters and everything matters. That's the cosmic joke and paradox. Everything and nothing was taking place constantly. It's sort of the fabric of the cosmos. I understood the deeper and hidden truth behind the false mask of modern takes on religion. All religion leads to the same place, which is the supreme infinite. Whatever you choose to do in life is okay. Just remember you'll be held accountable for your thoughts and actions. Be responsible and be accountable. Dissolve attachment at the same time as being present. Enjoy it for what it is. Take part but don't label. It's bigger than labels. Labels only minimise and block the truth. For the first time I could see and feel the beauty and relevance in fear, terror and death. It's equally as beautiful as the light. On the first time I drank, the second night I was thrown into a sort of a bottomless pit of grotesque shapes and colours and patterns, and I was in a really bad way because I was holding on. When I say I, my ego was holding on to anything. Short, shallow breaths, which obviously signify resistance, which I didn't know at the time. I found myself sort of outside of the sacred space, sweating profusely, didn't know what was up or down, begging for it to stop, crying my eyes out. And one of the intentions I went there with was trying to learn more about myself and an insecurity that I have of what people might think of me. And I didn't realise it at the time, but I was holding on to my bowels because I was scared of soiling myself and how I'd look. Once I realised that, I remember just saying, fuck it, fuck it, fuck it, and I just let go. And
did you shit yourself?
I thought I was. I had the feeling of shitting, pissing, whatever you want to. Every hole in my body, there was something coming out of, telepathically, if you like. When I checked my clothes the next day, they were completely clean, fortunately. But the second time I drank, as in at this most recent ceremony, on the second night I went to the same place, but what I mentioned to Ross earlier, I was able to look at it from a new vantage point, and it was really, really special. So it was highly eventful, and I'll just reel off a few notes again from night two. For the first time, I went up for the second drink. So during a ceremony, they will call you about an hour and a half to 2 hours in. Well, they'll slow down the music, maybe put a computer music on and sort of change the vibe. And depending on where you are in your own space, you can go up for another drink if you feel like it. And soon after, I think, and I say I think because there's no concept of time. You don't know if it's an hour or a minute. At least I don't. I found myself being hurtled through those familiar grotesque grounds. It was hard to breathe at points, but I understood it now as the medicine detoxifying all of those nooks and crannies that are on that deeper level. Again, I had several episodes of profuse sweating, and reminders of detachment were frequent but sometimes easily forgotten as the intensity increased. I felt like night one I was given pointers for navigation, and night two my willingness to implement them was truly tested. Assistance from others was strength beyond words. And it's okay to ask for help, you know, we're only human. It's not always easy to... It's easy to forget to not be so hard on yourself. And in all of the purification and internal chaos, I found myself scarpering for help, dark, naked.
Yeah.
Yeah, mate.
Nice.
Naked. cock and balls all over the place. I think it was a fascinating contrast between the two nights, much learning and adapting and integration to take forth. And at the heart of it, I mean, as terrifying as it can be, those... When you're hurled over a bucket, that's when you learn the most, you know, the deepest lessons in life. Would you agree?
Oh, most definitely. I think...
That was great, by the way. Cheers for that. Yeah, it was good.
I think touching upon when, obviously, you experienced it the first time and we were there together, you most definitely do. And I think going there, you said, it's about learning more about yourself and looking within, as well as taking and working with the medicine to obviously take away from that as well. I think one of the major things that they kind of think about ayahuasca is the death of the ego and relinquishing the fear of death, which I can most definitely say it does do that. I think Gerd's touched upon the ego and not being afraid to ask for help. And again, touching upon the kind of vomiting profusely scenario, I think one of the main things that touched me when I was there was the second night. My first night was extremely tough, purely for the fact that I said I wasn't really... I kind of had certain expectations in the back of my mind. I wasn't trying to focus on them, but because I had those expectations, I wasn't allowing myself to fully let go and experience it for what it truly was, which in turn made my first night not really anything to kind of talk about, really. It wasn't overly traumatic, but it was a struggle. It was something that I kind of had to struggle through. So it was a long 4 hours.
You have to struggle before you can emerge.
Oh, of course. And then I think because of that, my second night was by far one of the most amazing experiences I've ever experienced in my life. Purely down to the fact that before I even went in, I was ready to let go. I was at that point where I knew what had happened the night before. I'd learned from it and I was ready. Coincidentally, this is the night that Gerd's nearly shit himself. We had completely different kind of experiences.
Yeah. They were opposites, weren't they?
Completely opposite. And I think one of the most significant memories I remember having, you were on a small bed with a bucket at the end. And I can quite consciously say I've never experienced this at any other time in my life. I was sat on the end of the bed, throwing up profusely, rocking to the music, with the biggest smile on my face I've ever had, and tears flooding down my face. You have no control of your emotion and what it is, but within that period of time, I was connected with Mother Ayahuasca, and I could feel the presence of family around me, their spirit itself, and I knew I was in a place where I'd kind of transversed, if you like, and gone to another realm, as Gerd mentioned. And I think that in turn was one of the major turning points for me in realising the ultimate power of the medicine and what it can enable you as an individual to do and experience whilst you kind of guide and work with the medicine to try and take from that what you want as well, because they do say the best thing to do is work with the medicine. Go in there with specific intentions. Don't just go there. It's by no means any kind of recreational activity to do. But it really was a significant turning point, I think, from when we came back after that first experience. And obviously it can't have been that bad because Gerd went again the second time in the year, so...
Yeah, there's people who do it weekly and monthly, some of them.
Of course.
I mean, that's not my calling, and I don't think that's yours. Otherwise, I think you'd have probably been doing it. But
yeah.
I see where there's a big place in Western society for that medicine in particular to spread wildly. And I think it has been, to be fair, the last decade.
It'd be in NHS in the next
couple of years. I don't know about that, mate.
Well, I think the Amazon...
That'll treat people, though, mate. That won't... That'll cure them, wouldn't it? That's the problem.
Yeah.
The Amazonian tribes
that's the problem, yeah.
believe that we, as a Western world, like Gerd said, we've severed with our spirit, and they truly believe that.
But where does that spirit come from? What is it? Because obviously it's DMT. We know that that's created in the human body as it is.
We have souls.
Yeah, we do. But let's talk about the pineal gland a sec. Okay. We'll talk about that in a minute. We've got the pineal gland here. That's been talked about for centuries. You've got the eye, which is religion has called it the Orsino and related it to the devil, which I think has completely just flipped it on its head. I think the pineal gland is actually the realm of the spirit.
Of
you release your DMT, boom, you into it. If I could just quote something out of the Bible, which if you read it properly, I think it's probably one of the most powerful books you could read. If you read it as religion tells you to read, it's probably one of the worst books you could read. So I think it's depending on your level of consciousness, depends on how you read the book. One of the passages is, what did Jesus mean when he said, if thine eye be single, thy body will be full of light? What do you think he means by that?
Can you say that again?
If thine eye be single, thy body will be full of light.
I think
if you can connect with your soul, then the physical realm will follow, because your inner world is your outer world.
Precisely, yeah. I think that touches your body quite well.
I love the Bible, me.
And,
because you have to read between the lines, but most Christians don't.
Greatest story ever told.
Yeah. We're going to dive into religion here.
No, I don't think that's the conversation to delve down into, but...
My mum's listening.
But I think, again, you talk about the pineal gland, and like we've mentioned, we have DMT within us. It's in our pineal gland. We produce DMT. And every living mammal on this planet contains DMT. Every mammal, apart from, I think it's one, and I can't remember off the top of my head which one it is.
I think it's
a rabbit, but I can't remember. And plants. Everything contains DMT. And that's what we talk about in ayahuasca, with the connection of people and everything being connected. You leave there with a kind of presence that we are connected, and that's where we've come from, as we say, the Amazon tribes, who truly understand the connection between nature and us, that we should be living in coherence with nature, animals as well as plants. And again, everyone's got opposing views about this. You could go on for hours again, create a new podcast about it, but I think
it's called the vine of the soul, the vine of the dead, for a reason. Because when you die, scientifically, I believe it's proven, DMT is released in massive amounts.
It is.
So who's to say you're not going to the same place as you were with ayahuasca?
Buddhists think that 49 days after you die is when the soul reincarnates. And science has shown that on the 49th day after conception is when the pineal gland is created. So I think that's a little bit of a coincidence.
Most definitely. And I think also, like what Gerd was saying, when you enter, or when they say when you die, you've only got to do any part of reading on near-death experiences, and you'll see what kind of experiences people have. And I truly believe that's to do with DMT that we produce. And some of the experiences they have are extraordinary. And even again, you go on the other side of it, and there's evidence of children. We talk about reincarnation and stuff like that, coming back as a kind of other self. There's a lot of evidence, especially with children, because of a younger age, who can physically remember places and people from their previous lives. And I think when put in collaboration with near-death experiences as well, the power that our mind has, even without the use of psychedelics, I think the use of psychedelics we use to kind of enhance that experience and that kind of knowledge. But I mean, then again, you look at Buddhas who've been meditating for 20, 30 years, I think they're the kind of people who've managed to tap into that area of the brain where we as a Western civilization have managed to sever our connection with that part of the brain, because we don't utilize it. It's not something that we kind of work on as such. Yeah.
No, I agree with everything that I've heard. I think we're here as a test on this planet. If we can reach a certain level of consciousness and be kind and have compassion and be good humans, then when we die and we go to the judgment hall of Osiris and our actions and thoughts are weighed against the feather.
Could you expand on that?
Depend.
The judgment hall of Osiris.
Yeah, I think
the ancient Egyptian.
I think the Egyptians knew the things that we don't. last time I drank, I almost felt as if I was in the queue to get to the judgment hall. I can't say I got there or went there, because a lot of it is telepathic and a feeling. But the message I was given, which I touched upon when I was reading through my notes, is that you can live however you want to, you know, be a massively good person, be a rapist on the other end of the scale. You can do what you want, but depending on what you do and how you serve others will determine whether you come back here or if you transcend and go to the other realm. Because all we can see, I believe, is three or four dimensions with our eyes. But who's to say it doesn't go up to 12, 13?
Let's talk a little bit about alcohol in relation to like spirit and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the question I would ask is that what... Could this be the reason, when you talk about being disconnected with spirit, as we are in the Western world so much, the fact that so many people are addicted to alcohol or drug addiction, and the reason it's such a problem, I believe it's David Hawkins in his book,
Perverse Force
and Letting Go, and he basically comes up with a map of consciousness, and he can collaborate through kinesiology, and in his book he'll say that alcohol temporarily raises your state of consciousness. It does this by removing the lower, what you'd say is how he collaborates, the lower emotions like apathy, fear, guilt. All these things will temporarily be pushed away like clouds, but really they aren't there. So you've all got within yourself the power to do it. It's just that alcohol is a tool for people to get closer to God or temporarily raise their consciousness, if that's what you believe consciousness is.
I think when we talk about alcohol, and I've got quite a strong standpoint on alcohol, I don't tend to drink a lot of it. I think, in essence, I agree, it would raise your consciousness slightly, but then I think obviously you can go too far. But I think with alcohol, I think, and touching upon GERD earlier as well, I think that one of the major things within a Western world is a lot of us have lost compassion and we've lost the feeling of helping others. We're stuck in such a kind of facade where everyone's engulfed in Instagram and Facebook and the perfect life or the perfect world. And people see these things and they compare it to themselves. And I think that gives people a much lower self-esteem. It affects people far more than we probably understand and think, especially a younger generation. But again, you look at the older generation, then they've been brought up with alcohol. Everyone was drinking as young kids. It was a massive, massive thing in culture. And that's only expanded. I think the big problems with alcohol is the fact that it's so easily and readily available. And I mean, again, with cigarettes, you see with sugar as well now, how we've been fed these kind of toxic substances for years and years without really knowing the kind of effects of them. And then now that obesity has become such an epidemic, they're now saying go back to eating fats and not sugar, when it's the complete role reversal about 20, 30 years ago. And I think with that, like I said, I think the whole idea of alcohol and the addiction is, I just think that people they're looking for a better life to live in. Exactly. They feel like drinking alcohol every night or doing drugs and whatever else every night is going to help them feel in a way where they can escape, if you like, for a few hours on an evening, and then they're back to reality again the next day. And I do believe it is escapism. I think we've lost, like we say, that true connection with ourselves, which then helps expand our connection with others. Because if you truly know who you are in yourself, which I don't believe a lot of people could turn around and answer that truly, honestly. But if you truly know who you are, what your purpose is, what you're trying to achieve and do, you no longer worry about yourself. You worry more about helping others because you know the path that you're on. So no one's going to take you away from that. Your goal then moves outwards in order to want to help others, which by the law of attraction, things then end up helping you anyway. I'm sure yeah. everyone's got stuff to add to this as well. So yeah.
I think it's Carl Jung states that it takes the average person up to the age of 35 to develop a full ego and become fully individuated, which I think is important. I mean, the ego is often looked at as a negative thing, but I think in today's society, it's important to have a strong ego so you can integrate and have a part to play here on Earth. And we've all got a gift in one sense or another, and no matter what part of the journey we're on, we're all obviously in it to try and help each other.
It's the awareness of the ego that's the key. That's if you're not exactly aware of it, it'll control you.
Yeah. So do you think, obviously, think substances like alcohol and stuff like that, it's just there to kind of numb people's current reality because they haven't got the courage to face reality as they know it?
Potentially, yeah.
In a word, yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
So you end up with people that are 45 years old that are acting like a 12-year-old.
I think alcohol's legal for a reason and so readily available for a reason by the powers that be.
Yeah.
Without getting too much into conspiracy, which you don't want.
Would you think
David Icke?
think they're not fully within their right to do whatever they want? And to quote Michael Tazarian, we're all being sold a lie, but it's up to you whether, I'm paraphrasing, but it's up to you whether you choose to buy it. So it's up to everybody to take more responsibility.
But I don't think a lot of people are ready to take responsibility. I think they'd rather drink alcohol to numb those senses.
I'd love to meet someone who could say to me, I drink alcohol to transcend my consciousness. As opposed to, I want to get pissed.
But do you think that's I'm playing the layman here? But do you think that's necessarily not how it's supposed to be? Because we're all on different.
By all means, I think we're all on different paths. 100% agree with that, and I think everyone's got their own time to try and find certain things. But again, like you say, you touch upon the Egyptians. The Egyptians were, if you do some deeper research, and not just about pyramids being built by slaves at school in textbooks and whatever else. They were extremely conscious race, if you like. And I think everyone was part of that society because that's what they believed in and resonated with. Now, I think, thinking about the Western world, I mean, you mention psychedelics to some people and they'll think you're a crackhead.
Yeah.
Like because they've not looked into the benefits and what they actually do. I think they've more now stigmatized along the lines of, we use the word drugs as a singular word to kind of hold in that group a vast array of substances, and I do think that the word drugs is almost offensive in a way towards medicines like ayahuasca, cannabis even. Yes, it can be abused, but I think at the same token, it's a far, far safer plant and it's got many, many health benefits to the use of the plant, whether smoked or ingested in other ways.
Or used for hemp, it's endless.
For whatever reason. But again, these things are made illegal. From a personal perspective, because they don't want you to see these things. They don't want you to gain a higher level of consciousness. They don't want you to think outside the box, and they don't want you to be an individual. They want you to follow a crowd.
Alongside the fact that Big Pharma is a $1 billion industry.
Well, it's collectivism, as you've just said there. People don't want to be individual. They want to be led. And it's a hard thing for people to listen to, but they do. You've mentioned there, Ross, about alcohol. And you said, is it people's individual journeys that they're going on? Yeah, but there's only one. That is true, 100%, but there's only one objective truth. And that to get towards that objective truth, you're not going to be drinking alcohol to get there, are you?
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, it is individual journeys, but that doesn't make it right.
No. I think, obviously, we're all at different levels for a reason, but obviously, as long as we're all trying to do our best in terms of moving more towards loving each other and
I think even the word journey as well, though, is hard to use when talking about alcohol because when you go on a spiritual journey, you're taken somewhere, and whether people call them hallucinations, visions, whatever they are, you're actually experiencing something on a far deeper level. Yeah. Now, I know from personal experience, whenever I've drank alcohol, I feel great for a few drinks. Then I feel pretty like far gone. Yeah. And then if I have any more, I'm just on the floor and I feel absolutely phenomenally awful the next day. I think a journey of alcohol will only ever lead to one place, which I think is liver disease and massive overconsumption.
Yeah, I think we can all agree that nothing ever great came from... I think everyone's going to be on their deathbed and think, I wish I had a few more pints on the weekend.
Yeah.
Or nothing ever really great comes from self-sabotaging through substances that are... from things that are going to harm your health and physical health and mental health. So I think just to draw a line under that, I think everyone should take more responsibility for their physical health in order to reach the higher realms of spirituality.
I think as well, you mentioned ego earlier. I think a lot of people aren't interested in taking note of their own personal health because of their egos at times. A lot of people are so infatuated with an ego and who they are and who other people think they are that they're not really interested in themselves because other people have got a perception of who they are and that's who they believe they are. So they don't end up wanting to look within because they've already got a feeling of, well, that's who I am. That's who my friends think I am. That's who I'm. That's who I've been for however many years or whatever else.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Egypt. You've mentioned Egypt a couple of times. What do you know about that? What have you studied?
Fuck all.
You mentioned about Osiris and that. You must know a little bit.
I know a little.
I don't think you call it study. I think you'd call it additional reading and research. I've not gone. I don't think either of us have gone massively into the kind of. Do plan to, but I think when you start off on this kind of deeper journey, you
well, you tell
so
us
much. There's so much
you're
out there.
Hermetic guy.
But yeah, I do think from on a relatively simple level, I think the Egyptians were far more advanced than we are as in a particular age that we are in now. I think a lot of people think that we're the most intelligent.
I think that they were the most advanced civilization, for sure, through their use of.
And you think we've dropped in consciousness since then?
I believe so, yeah. But I think we're on the way back up.
I think people look at technology as intelligence, and it's not. I think people look at how we are now in this particular modern age to believe that because we've become so intelligent in the form of creating this certain technology and these certain levels, that automatically perceives that we are the most intelligent and the most conscious of our time. But I think the fact that no one can even still to this day explain how the pyramids were built, and when you do go further into it and start looking into kind of theories and stuff like that, I think it's quite evident that we probably won't ever know. But it's they were definitely an extremely conscious race. And I mean, when you'd go even deeper into it and look at what the pyramids were for, then you kind of get onto a completely different subject.
We can't even build a chair now without it wobbling.
And we've got to IKEA.
We all think we're...
you got to build that yourself.
You made that yourself. I mean, have you guys ever looked into the yuga cycles before?
No.
The sun's path?
Not
and how that affects consciousness levels of people?
Not
to Hindu text. Are you in Hindu? In what's the word? Ancestry, if you like.
Funnily enough, every time I drink medicine, I feel like
mega Hindu.
Mega Hindu / Buddhist. So I'm into it in that text, but I haven't, you know, done massive research into that.
Right. Well, basically, just a very brief, because I can go into it for hours, but. Every 26,000 years, the sun does its cycle.
I've heard this from Tazarian,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah. And so that's where the star systems come in.
Yeah.
There's 2,000 and odd years, and the sun goes through certain cycles. The what's it called? Star signs go through the sun and whatever else. And that has a big effect on
the
consciousness.
Zodiac, yeah.
The zodiac, yeah.
Okay.
And it has a big effect on human consciousness. So,
absolutely.
We've been in the lowest, according to Hindu scripture, the Vedas, we've been going through the lowest consciousness level for over 2,000 years, and we've just basically come out of it. So that's take good. From that as you will.
Yeah,
have a look deep into that, because there's a lot of truth in all that stuff. But back to the Egyptians, where did they come from?
Rumour has it that aliens merged with...
That's a completely gone different down that ball. Path. That's a completely different ball game.
There's one in California the other day, wasn't there?
An alien?
A fossil.
A fossil, yeah. Or was that spaceship? Oh, that spaceship. I thought that was Tesla. Oh, no, that SpaceX.
Was Elon Musk, wasn't it? SpaceX.
I was. Oh, I was just watching it.
It's a good story, though, and you just tell everybody it's a spaceship, yeah.
Well, yeah.
What did you say about aliens? What have you heard about that? Because with ayahuasca and other psychedelics, a lot of people say that they meet these type of entities.
Yeah.
And they write that down.
Yeah, absolutely. Beings that don't need to communicate with you verbally. It's a thought, and you feel it. It's absolutely true. It's real.
I mean, you could go down a massive rabbit hole in regards to kind of introduction of reptilian races and all that kind of stuff, and hybrid races, which is where the Egyptians apparently stemmed from.
Let's look at Atlantis a sec.
Go on.
Because Atlantis is Plato written full text on Atlantis and about. There was a lost civilization,
mm-hmm.
And they were very, very conscious beings. Where did they go? If I had to take a wild guess based on study, I'd say that the British Isles across the Scandinavia, which science is now proving there's land masses between everything, and to the west of Ireland was actually Atlantis at the time, and I think Ireland and Britain especially was actually where the most enlightened people were on the planet pre-Egypt. And I think there was a migration towards the Middle East, that area where Egypt is.
Why did they migrate?
I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. Warmer climate would help, I suppose, but I don't know the answer. But the pharaohs, if you look at all those guys, it's been a bloodline. It's been a bloodline ever since, and those guys are still going today.
Of course.
That don't die out.
Our worlds run through bloodlines. Mm-hmm. If you
bloodline and ritual is at the heart of what they do. Leaving things in plain sight.
Yeah.
Taking the piss.
Because apparently, I don't know, again, I've never dived into that, the darkness, the cult of darkness and whatever else, but they do rituals such as child sacrifice and whatever else. I'm going to be deep here, I know. But they do all this. Look at the Bilderberg group. Alex Jones is a bit of a nutcase, but he actually infiltrated that group and did a big series on it.
Well, you look at Pizzagate as well, and all these scandals that have been released. And I mean,
look at Jimmy Savile; he's good, best mates with Prince Charles.
Can I just say, if you are listening and want to get deeper into this, then listen to episode 911 of the Joe Rogan podcast.
Yeah,
and you'll hear Alex Jones.
He's a legend.
There's plenty. Extra reading you can do to go down into these kind of theories. I think one thing to touch upon is we talk about aliens, and you talk about aliens to a lot of people, it's the same as psychedelics, they'll think you're crazy and whatever else, but I think for us as human beings to think that we're the only civilization present within our universe is an extremely egotistical point of view, which is again, how us as a Western civilization especially have come to kind of lose or have an extremely lower level of consciousness.
But that's what science is pushing. Well, science is pushing. You're just a big cosmic accident.
But science don't want to get involved in psychedelics and stuff like that. Graham Hancock was blasted. The TEDx talk that he did was banned until they realised the kind of backlash that they were getting.
Yeah.
And they were forced to put it back up. But yeah. Science has never really been open to talk about these kind of realms, because if it can't be proved by fact or numbers,
materialism,
then it's not real.
Yeah.
But that's not the case.
It's become a religion in itself, science is. It's just atheism.
Scientology.
Yeah, well, no, that ain't science. Is it? I don't think they're mad. They are. Those guys are barking mad. Yeah, I am offending you as well. I'm not saying no offence. That is offence to you. I was going to ask you a quick question. Do you want to chip in with anything?
I'm quite happy listening at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
I'm learning a lot.
Oh, yeah. A couple of names on in regards to alternative science. You've got your Graham Hancock, who was a journalist originally. Rupert Sheldrake's quite quite out the box thinking. He's been banned from a few universities, so he's probably doing something on the right line somewhere. Nikola Tesla was obviously one of the main scientists from around 120 years ago. There's so many out there now that are sort of breaking down the barriers that science have put up for everybody. If you study the structure of the atom, for example, quantum physics has now dived into the atom, and it's 99.9 to the 6, I think it is, empty space.
Is it true that when observed, an atom behaves differently?
It's a wave, yeah. So when you don't observe it,
it's a split particle theory. So it's in wave function.
Yeah.
As soon as it's observed by the human eye, it breaks down into a particle, basically. Yeah. Long story short,
that brings that shift back to like what you said about how we as humans perceive things and how we see them, because we've only got a limited sensory output, if you like, hear, smell, touch.
I think our brains are sort of like radio receivers. When you take things like psychedelics, etc., your brain's able to interact with other parts of itself that it wouldn't usually, which opens up new doors.
So your filters are there and the filters get removed.
Filter remover, exactly.
Touching upon that as well as a receiver, I think what a lot of people do believe in regards to the brain as well is we as human beings are a bit like a television and a television set. We're here at the minute within our body as a being, but say when your TV breaks, the signal doesn't stop, it's just you've got to change your TV. And it's the same thing that a lot of people believe in when we transcend, like we talk about reincarnation. A lot of people believe that through our souls, we are connected in a higher way. We're just here inhabiting a body at the minute to continue to learn.
You watched that TED talk last night, didn't you? It's all fresh.
I did, yeah.
What, with Hancock?
Yeah.
Hancock. Did you?
Yeah.
Well, we're all energy, aren't we? So everything fundamentally is energy, vibrating at a certain frequency. So when the physical body does die, it's science can't prove that energy doesn't just stop. It has to transcend into some sort of other sort of vibration. So,
do you believe that?
I believe that. Yeah, I believe that energy can't be stored and it'll just change its
form.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I heard a saying the other day that you just go into the next room, you know, and you don't. You just go into the next room. Yeah. Who knows?
You wait in turn. in turn to be judged.
Do you think you're judgment? 100%, or do you think that's religious doctrine?
No.
Who's judging you?
Well, last time I drank, I was given a number of messages, one of which was, don't be so hard on yourself. Leave the judging to us. That's what we do. Whether you want to call that God's, my higher self, or whatever else, that's the message I was given.
I think on a deeper level, it could be coming from your higher self. Again, like you say, it's very speculative in what you can perceive it to be.
I just really, really resonate with Egyptian philosophy and the Egyptians. Something about them just feels really right with me. And when I think about the Judgment Hall of Osiris, it all falls into place.
Surely, if God's the absolute, everything. Which would mean it has to be nothing simultaneously. Yeah. How can a force like that judge if it's equally the bad to the and the good?
Maybe it's not the all that's judging in order for you to transcend ascend. Maybe it's of another dimension, but not the all.
Took the words out of my mouth.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I've never thought about that. We don't know, do we?
No.
I think you can know, and I think you can ascend to that level before you die.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can find them things out with guides and whatever else. Yeah. Big believer in it all, because I've seen them.
Yeah. So I mean, look at someone like Paul Cech.
Oh, he's a legend. I think love a bit of Paul Cech, don't you, mate?
he's my... I'm a fanboy, to say the least.
Yeah.
I think he's been to certain places, and he'd probably be the guy to ask, but... No, I agree with Alex in that I don't think it is God that judges. I think it's his little helpers, if you like, who also reside in that realm. But God, like you say, mate, is everything and nothing. Once you try and measure God, you've missed
already,
the point, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, you've already,
as Czech says.
Yeah, I love
it. Of course. I think touching slightly on Egyptians, just to go back to that again, when we were talking about a higher level of consciousness, there's scientific evidence and proof now, and Gerd might be able to explain this slightly more as well, but we talk about ayahuasca as a plant medicine. The Egyptians were renowned for using certain plants as well to help engage in higher levels of consciousness. One of them, I believe, was the blue tiger lily.
Yeah.
Was it the blue tiger lily? So, yeah. And then there was another one. And as you could see from that many thousand years ago, plant medicine has been within, at the forefront of a lot of these kind of ancient civilizations and tribes, which clearly tells me that they knew something that we don't.
Similarly to the Vedic. Vedic?
Vedic.
Which is sort of
the Hindu texts.
Ancient, first known Hindu texts. The Flyalargic, I might be saying that wrong. Flyagaric, rather, the Amanita muscaria. That was the staple point of their belief system. A psychoactive mushroom. You might have seen it red with white spots on top.
Yeah.
Now, they knew that the psychoactive principles of the mushroom pass through the body unmetabolized, meaning it doesn't work, if you like. But what they realized is that once they pissed, it was active, so they'd drink the urine of others, and it was like sacred rain.
Oh, nice.
You know, so it's been used for thousands of years before.
I wonder who first tried that.
Who knows?
I think, touching upon another point, we have touched upon it slightly, but going towards a different type of plant and talking about cannabis. When you start to actually research into this plant, and you actually realise, back in the 1800s, every single chemist had cannabis products within the chemist, whether it was ailments for tinctures to be taken edibly or for your skin. Pretty much every medicine contained a form of cannabis. Now, we fast forward 100 years and we've got Big Pharma on the case who've created now, what they've done is created a synthesized version of cannabis to mimic a plant that's grown in the ground that doesn't need changing, it doesn't need mimicking. It's a natural substance. They've mimicked it to the extent of it's meant to create the same, have the same kind of health benefit functions, if you like, with the non-psychoactive element to it. Well, irrespective if you want to use psychoactive element or not, there's plenty CBD things out there that you can utilise through the use of cannabis, which a lot of people are doing now. And I think we are entering a big shift in regards to the legalisation. Because at the end of the day, we talk about ayahuasca, it's an illegal substance because it contains DMT.
Which is produced in our pineal glands. Well, so what, are we all illegal too?
Well, exactly.
Where's the logic?
The same thing comes from cannabis. If you can grow something in the ground, so why aren't I allowed to grow cannabis, but I'm allowed to grow tomatoes and whatever else I perceive to grow as a vegetable or a flower, which is what cannabis is? How can a government, to me, put a ban on a substance contained within a plant?
Because government means mind control.
Well, yeah.
In a nutshell.
Literally, literally, that's what it means.
These are the thought processes that people do not go through, because we've become so trained now in this war on drugs and choose alcohol over drugs and this, that and the other. I mean, we mentioned the word drugs before. I don't believe you can categorise ayahuasca, mushrooms, psilocybin, cannabis in anywhere near the same kind of group as cocaine, heroin, methamphetamines. It's just phenomenal how everyone seems to think, oh, just because you smoke weed, you next thing you might be smoking crack or...
Yeah, a gateway, that's what one of the arguments is, isn't it? Yeah. It's a gateway drug.
In a personal opinion, I think alcohol is far more of a gateway drug than cannabis ever is or ever was. Because people only say it's a gateway drug because people call it a drug. But alcohol isn't called a drug in Western society. But I'm not naming names, anyone... far more people use cocaine as a gateway after having alcohol than people going and smoking marijuana and then all of a sudden wanting to inject heroin in the system. To me, alcohol's a far more of a gateway than marijuana will ever be, in a personal opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Before we wrap up, let's just touch on microdosing. I know, Josh, you've got... Well, you've just started again, haven't you? Or is it your first time? Or
no, I've never done it before. I think... Yeah, I've been doing quite a lot of research into it and a lot of reading into it. When we talk about microdosing, it can be done in a number of ways, but generally it's done with either LSD or psilocybin extracted from mushrooms. The idea of microdosing is you take a sub-perceptual dose so that the psychoactive
effects
that you would have taking a normal dose are no longer present. However, the sub-perceptual dose that you do take, which is a very, very small dosage that you take over a period of 1 day and then you don't have another one until a few days afterwards. The idea of it is to improve cognitive brain functions, because as we've gone through a lot in this talk and spoken about the kind of way that our brain works and our kind of neurological pathways, as we grow, those pathways tend to become very kind of set in stone, if you like, through our own processes, habits, practices, whatever it is. And those pathways along the way might not be what it is that we want to be in that particular period of time. Some of the major benefits from microdosing through two completely different ends of the spectrum are improved productivity and creativity. A lot of Silicon Valley and big tech coders and IT people are starting to utilise microdosing far, far more now because they've realised the benefits of how it can affect their work as well as your own mental state. Again, I'm not by any means necessarily going to be promoting myself as an expert. This is the first time I've ever tried it, and I'm sure if we pick up again on a further podcast, we can touch back on it.
We'll do that. What we'll do is we'll, because you only started very recently, didn't you? So we'll, in 4 to 6 weeks, we'll just see how everything's going on and
of course, bring it back on. I'd be happy to do that. I think one of the major, just before we finish, one of the major breakthroughs that I see microdosing having, as well as now the legalisation of marijuana in other countries being allowed to be utilised for medicinal purposes, is to help treat people in a far more natural therapeutic way than just putting pills down your throat in order to be able to create a kind of miracle cure, if you like, for something that's been synthesised in a laboratory. These things are proven to help with anxiety, depression, people who need that kind of helping hand, who are sat at home, can't get off the sofa, taking, like we say, umpteen amount of tablets a month. I really, truly believe that these plants and substances, if you like, hopefully within the not too distant future, will hopefully start taking a much more, will have a much bigger presence within the kind of Western world than there is currently.
Yeah, man, I agree.
Yeah.
Should we wrap it up?
Yeah. Closing thoughts from myself. Be kind. Have compassion. Protect what you believe. Have and live by your values. And be responsible.
Yeah, man. Wise words.
Yeah, I think the last one, especially, being responsible. Always do a bit of research and try and find people who've experienced things before if you are interested in going down this path and trying certain things. If it's your first time, then definitely do a bit of research. I mean, by all means, I'm sure you can contact Alex if you need any info.
Just message us through the website if you'd be interested in looking more into ayahuasca retreats or anything like that. Just drop us a message through the website or an email.
Great. I'd just like to thank you for coming on and sharing your thoughts and wisdom on it as well.
Cheers.
Definitely all very new to me, and I've always been quite sceptical about it. I think being a health coach, I can get stuck more on the physical side of things. But I'm definitely open to listening to people's stories, and I'm open to anything in the future. And these two lads have obviously brought a lot of wisdom back from it. So yeah.
Thank you very much, fellas. Cheers.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody.
Cheers. Cheers.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Infinite Potential Podcast. Please follow us on the various social media platforms and visit our website for further content. A heartfelt thank you from the whole team.